Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing on Thursday afternoon. Joining me from Orlando, Florida, at the G League Showcase, Tim Bontemps.
Sitting in the made-up cafeteria here in the truly ginormous Orlando Convention Center. It's the biggest building I think anybody here has ever been in. Way too big for this event.
Bigger than that convention center in Vegas we were next to 2 weeks ago, because that was gigantic there.
It's bigger than that. It's like two of those.
Do you have fond, warm feelings of the last time you spent a long stretch in Orlando during 2020?
No. No. I would have been happy to never come back. And now I'm here twice and I'm back-to-back weeks I'll be here. So here we are.
By the way, I didn't know this, and I may be just way behind on this, but the winners of the G League Showcase, the player, each player gets 10 grand. Now, I realize that that's not comparable to the 500 grand that the NBA guys got for winning the in-season tournament, but the average salary in the G League is around $40,000. That's real money. And I don't think there's a second place. I could be wrong. I don't think there's a second place prize pool.
So. I just watched Jordan Bell block three shots in about 5 seconds in a game earlier today. I think he was interested in trying to get that money.
I think he's probably interested in trying to get an NBA contract.
Well, I did not.
I did not predict Jordan Bell be mentioned on this podcast. Joining us from the FedEx Forum in Memphis is Bam McMahon.
Howdy, partners. There's a little parade planned outside the arena here about an hour and a half. It's nice of them to throw a parade for me covering my first game in the building this year. I really appreciate that.
Is there actually a parade today?
I mean, it's about a half block, but there is a parade. And, clearly for John Morant's delayed home debut. And this was mentioned to him that the parade was planned. And he said, they've got one job, one song they got to play. It's a parade inside my city. Yeah.
What's that song that they,
I think the song's actually called Fresh Prince of Utah, but Ja's line the lyric he always says is, it's a parade inside my city.
Why I'm having a senior moment here. The song that they always play that
whoop that trick.
Will that be played as well?
I don't know, but I'm afraid some people might think I'm that trick. So
I feel you. All right. So Ja's first home game on Thursday night against the Pacers. McMahon was at Ja's comeback jaw-dropping finish in New Orleans the other night. We'll talk about that later, but it's that time of year.
Ooh.
The first Bontemps poll. That's what I call it. I call it the Bontemps poll.
It's the BS poll, the Bontemps straw poll.
McMahon's line is the better.
Right.
One.
The Bontemps straw poll came out surveying the MVP voters for the first time this year. The floor is yours, Mr. Bontemps. What do we have?
Well, we have, shockingly, Joel Embiid and Nikola Jokic first and second again. And my biggest takeaway from this thing was,
thank
frankly,
God Embiid hasn't missed three games with a sprained ankle. Thank God.
Here we go, jackass.
I was genuinely fascinated to see what this poll would look like. Coming into the voting, did the voting from Sunday to Tuesday. I really didn't know how it was going to go. I thought it was wide open, but I did not really know how this was going to shake out. And frankly, I was a little surprised that it shook out with Joel Embiid and Nikola Jokic so far ahead of everyone else, because that's not really typically how this thing has played out. And I thought there was some chance, after those guys are first and second past 3 years, that there could be some voter fatigue. I actually, frankly, thought LeBron James would get a lot of votes, given what he did with the Lakers, winning the in-season tournament. He's been awesome. He's been healthy. Like, I thought he'd get a ton of votes. He barely got any, as we'll talk about in a bit.
But he got a whole bunch of votes for the in-season tournament. This is for the whole shebang, though.
That is true. But turned out that, and in particular, with the way Joel Embiid is playing completely out of his mind right now, he sits in first with a healthy lead over Nikola Jokic. And you know, after the last couple of years where the guy who was in first faded down the stretch, from LeBron 3 years ago, Steph Curry 2 years ago, to Tatum last year, I feel pretty confident that, bar an injury, we're going to be talking about once again Joel Embiid and Nikola Jokic for the fourth straight year coming down to the line to see which of them wins MVP again.
I will say this, though. So, by the way, Embiid had 63 of the 100 first place votes. Is that what I
correct?
Saw?
And Jokic had 21.
So, and I did text Bontemps last night. So it would be Wednesday night, asking if it was too late to change my vote. I had let John Morant's crazy comeback performance simmer for a little bit, and I wanted to go with John Morant. No, I'm just kidding. As amazing as that return was, I'm watching Embiid put 51 efficiently, and honestly, a lot of times made it look easy. 51 points.
Well, here's the crazy thing about that game. He 17 for 25.
I haven't said which game it was.
Well, you're saying he was efficient. I just wanted to point out he was 17 for 25 in the game. He started out 1 for 17 for 18 on his last 18 shots
against the defensive player of the year front runner, a 3-time defensive player of the year who Rudy Gobert got in foul trouble, and that helped, but still against the number one defense by a significant margin in the NBA. And dude, Embiid right now, when he catches the ball above the free throw line, turns around, faces up, it's a layup. Like, his efficiency on those face up contested, get just enough space, mid-range jump shots is insane. And averaging a career high assist, like if you throw a second body at him, he'll pick that apart. He can put it on the floor. Like, this guy, what's the stat that you sent us today, Wendy? You sent us some kind of stat that had one of my favorite old timers in there.
Oh, Bob Pettit.
Bob Pettit stat.
Yes. 50 in 10 games. Joel Embiid now has 7. That passes Bob 50 Pettit. 50
points, 10 rebounds, just to be clear.
Yeah, 50 points, 10 rebound games. He has 7. That passes Bob Pettit on the all-time list. And we all know Bob Pettit was playing against plumbers. Friggin' Embiid.
Electricians. Don't forget about the electricians and carpenters.
Did they have electricity back then? I'm not sure.
I don't know.
I'll
have to check.
And he wouldn't
Bob
deal
Pettit
with Rudy
slander
Gobert.
Is uncalled for.
He wasn't dealing with Rudy Gobert. I mean, but seriously, Embiid, we've said it before, and I did have Joker. I would change that now, so it'd be 64 first place votes.
Wow, that's a fast change. I mean, geez, it was 2 days ago.
First of all, I voted Sunday, okay?
Okay.
Unlike Brian.
Because I don't drag my feet on these things.
That's
right. I try
right.
to let Bontemps get on about it. And
thankfully, McMahon sends his ballot right away every time, and I have to beg Brian every time to send me it.
I'm thoughtful.
Thank you, McMahon.
Mine
you're not thoughtful.
I wanted to make sure nobody sprained their ankle.
You're
got
whine about having to do it. That's what you did.
Doesn't help with the accuracy of the BS poll because I don't have the official vote anyways.
Hopefully we'll change that this year.
I don't need that kind of heat. but dude, Embiid's had a pretty good run since then. And like I said, I was 51-49. I kind of went with, hey, Embiid won it last year. Joker's finals MVP. Joker's, to me, still deserves the title of his best player in the game coming off that championship run. So that was kind of the tiebreaker. But again, I'm watching this guy go for 51-12 against the best defense in the league and saying, I can't say somebody else is the MVP of the league right now.
So, yeah, 63 votes. Now, Bontemps, I think you've told this story before, but I would ask you to tell it again about last year when the first straw poll came out. I believe you were in Philly within a day or two of it coming out.
Yeah, I was there the day it came out, and Joel had either one vote or no votes. I don't remember. And he was very annoyed and thought the race was over. And I told him, well, just keep dominating and winning games, and you'll be fine. Because Joel had missed a good chunk of the beginning of last season, so he hadn't played that many games. So he just didn't get a lot of votes, but you know, the rest of the year went as we know, and he came away with the MVP trophy. Speaking of stories, when I sat down with him last week, before we got started, I gave him a hard time because he didn't dress up too much for our interview. And I told him how, when he won MVP last year, Brian was flabbergasted when Embiid walked in practice gear. He's going, this is going to be an all-time moment. These pictures are going to be posted up forever, and he's showing up in practice gear. What is he doing? I said to Joel, I told you at the time, this is what this guy does. He shows up in practice gear wherever he goes. He has no interest in being dressed up, and he just laughed. That's right.
When MVP announcements normally happen, they create memes, right? And everyone's family is there. But last year it was literally done on a game day after a shoot around in Boston. So whatever. I was like, yeah, Joel's going to want to change his clothes after a shoot around. But Bontemps was like, he is not.
Dude.
And he did not.
One of my great goals in life is to never have to wear anything that has buttons on it. And if I could do wear nothing but like t-shirts, hoop shorts, and sweats, that would be awesome. And it would be even better if I didn't have to pay a dime for any of it. So yeah. I respect his commitment to comfort.
He's working on getting it for free. Very hard, though. By the way, we're all in suits right now. This is the first in a long
time. It's a rare moment.
Hey, this is like when I got shipped off to boarding school, not a voluntary assignment.
Well, and look, the other...
Just stay off the banned list there, McMahon.
It's worth pointing out, for as well as Embiid is playing, and it's something we talked about in my conversation with him last week, he clearly has a pretty healthy chip on his shoulder about the way the Sixers and he were sort of dismissed in the wake of the James Harden stuff. People saying, well, they're not going to be that good. They're not really going to matter. This is a gap year, right? All that stuff. It clearly...
Joel's lining up waiting for him to hit the trade market.
Yes. That's true. And it all of that clearly sat on his mind. And he has come out this year with an obvious point to prove all the way along. And the thing he has talked to me about for a very long time is that the benchmarks for him for all-time greatness are winning MVPs and winning titles and winning them both, not just having one or the other. And I asked him why that was the case. And he was like, look, if you are going to be an all-time great player, you have to have something to show for it. Mm-hmm. And he made the point of bringing up Robert Horry, who won, I think, 7 titles with the Lakers and Spurs and Rockets. But he goes, is Robert Horry a top 50 all-time player? I said, no, probably not. And he said, well, I was playing
no Bob
along
Pettit.
With him. He is no Bob Pettit. But I pointed out, like, look, this is, or he said, this is what I need to do. I need to get more MVPs. I need to get more titles. That's the kind of
war titles
thing he is. He needs to win titles, but that's where his head is at. That's what he's trying to accomplish. And he's out, look at the way he's playing. It set the Sixers up like we talked about on the last pod. They've got a lot with him and Tyrese Maxey, a lot of outs this year in the trade market to get better. I think they're going to be very aggressive trying to get better because they know what they have. And Embiid is just playing at an unbelievable level every night. Mm-hmm. The only thing you could really criticize about this recent run is that he didn't play against any great teams. And what does he do? He goes out against the best defense in the league and the guy who's been the best defensive player in the league, probably other than him this year, in Rudy Gobert. And gets 2 fouls on Rudy Gobert and Karl Towns and Naz Reid in the first quarter of the game and just blitzes them all night long in a truly dominant performance from start to finish.
And they convincingly beat. I know people don't put the Timberwolves in the same kind of conversation as the top shelf contenders, but they convincingly beat the team that's sitting number one in the Western Conference standings. That was a just unbelievably impressive performance by Embiid and by the Sixers as a whole.
And they didn't have Nick Batum, who's been a really key piece for them. And De'Anthony Melton got hurt in the middle of the game and missed the game. Like, that was a really, really, really good win for them last night.
Two things I want to point out. One, there's a little bit of history that happened in this game that our stats and information people looked up. One, Embiid is the first player to score 50 and have 10 rebounds against the number one defense in the last 60 years.
Wow.
The other two were Jordan in 87. And, that's pre Scottie Pippen. So that's prime Chucker Jordan, right? And 2006, Kobe Bryant, which was post Shaq. I think that was the year Kobe averaged 35, which in today's day and age would be like 44, where he was just, ripping Smush Parker at 6 o'clock and scoring 50 at 8 o'clock. And so that's the kind of level that Embiid did, that kind of performance. Prime, not necessarily prime Jordan and prime Kobe, but prime scoring Jordan and Kobe. That's what he did. And Jordan and Kobe didn't have Tyrese Maxey on their roster. In fact, one of the interesting things about this Sixers team, and this is a little bit of a skewed point because they've had so many fourth quarters where it doesn't matter, Embiid tends to dominate the first and third quarters offensively, at least scoring. And then Maxey tends to dominate the second and fourth quarters. And that's what happened last night. Maxey had a big fourth quarter. And
there's a reason for that. Embiid plays the entire first and third quarter, and Maxey plays the entire second and fourth quarter.
Right. I mean, of course, there's minutes regardless. Minutes have a role there.
But I just mean that's the way their natural rotation goes. That's all.
Right. And so that is a beautiful symbiosis that, you worry about star players getting to play together. And obviously You want to have a small enough. What are you talking about?
I'm laughing. I was laughing at Ken's face because when you said symbiosis, I could tell he was trying to figure out what the hell symbiosis means.
I got the symbi part. I don't know where the osis comes in.
All right. Anyway,
means they fit well together, McMahon, just like us.
Here's the other stat. Embiid made 11 mid-range jumpers against the Wolves. Now, that's the shot you want him to take.
Well, yeah, but they're like layups for him.
I know. And
these are with Gobert's hand in his face a lot of times.
Every time Joel Embiid shoots a free throw line jumper, I'm stunned when it hits anything but the bottom of the net. Well, it's just automatic.
He shoots him from the free throw line because that's the hardest place to double him.
Yeah.
Because if you bring help, it's just him. He's just picking you off. It's not even hard. It's a math problem.
Well, and he likes to roll to that spot too. He'll set the screen.
Oh yeah.
And Tyrese, and same thing with James Harden last year. It's how James Harden led the league in assists. Hit that pocket pass. Joel would do this little short roll to the elbow.
Dirk Nowitzki's career.
No, that nail where Dirk would set up, and it's the same. It's like he's not a guy who's going to take a bunch of dribbles. But boy, if he needs to put it on the floor one time, make a little spin move and finish, and Embiid, like Dirk would get to his little one-legger, and Embiid just so strong, he just bullies people. But no, he just wants to get a little bit of space. He's 7'2", even Gobert, he can shoot right over, unless you absolutely crowd him. And then when you crowd him, that's when he can put it on the floor and make his move.
Yeah, that's right.
You double him, he's picking you apart.
You take a step too close, he puts it on the floor, and he's on the line.
That's the other thing. He lives at the line. He was 8 of 9 against Gobert yesterday, according to our stats and info folks. 8 of 9 against
Gobert. After the game, Gobert just had to come over and dap him up and be like, well done, sir.
Well done. A couple other stats that I found interesting from our Stats Williams in our Stats and Info group. Both of these were Embiid, Wilt, and Kareem stats. Last 8 games. 41.4 points per game on 61% field goal shooting. Guys who average 40 points on 60% shooting over an 8-game span, 63 Wilt, 72 Kareem. And then 7th career game with 50 points, 10 rebounds, and 60%+ shooting. That ties Kareem for the second most all time. I said 7. Wilt leads. You guys want to guess how many Wilt had?
50.
Well, he averaged 50 and 20 one year. So yeah. I would say more than that.
It's a 60% shooting that's a little.
Oh, right.
Yeah. I'm still going to say 50.
37.
Yeah, close enough.
it's one of those Wilt stats. But I mean,
the most unbreakable Chamberlain record, I know what it is. Do you guys know what I think? The most
minutes per game.
That's right.
48.5 minutes a game.
I like the 100 points chance of standing too. I like the 50 points per game in a season.
Getting 100 points. I can't see anybody averaging 48.5 minutes because that's what he did.
Well, or averaging 50 points. By the way, the only time in the history of the league a guy has averaged more points than minutes played in a season was the year when Wilt played more than 48 minutes a game and averaged more than 50 points a game. And Joel is creeping up on being the longest into a season. Mm-hmm. Anybody's done that since then. James Harden and Giannis have both done it a little bit longer. But, I mean, we spent 10 minutes rattling off Joel stats, and it doesn't really – it only tells part of the story of how good he's been. All right.
So we talked about how dominant Jokic has been. He will have an opportunity to close the gap. They're going to play.
Well, it's also worth pointing out from a timing standpoint, Jokic – we talked about how that Jokic had that rough stretch of play right before this, right?
Right.
He has those games where he uncharacteristically missed a ton of shots. Nuggets dropped a couple games. Then Embiid comes back and has this 10-game stretch where he's just going crazy. Like, a lot of this is, I'll be the first to say, a lot of these, especially the first couple, depends on when in the calendar it falls and how people are playing. But those two are at the top of the heap, and it's not really a surprise.
Okay, so third place.
Got Giannis Antetokounmpo, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander then in fourth, and Luka Doncic in fifth, all bunched up within 45 points. Those five guys would be, if they finish in the top five together, would be the first time there's five foreign-born players in the top five in MVP.
Well, we got an American. I'm proud to be an American, says Joel Embiid. Thank you, Uncle Sam.
That's right. Team USA, baby. USA.
That's why I said foreign-born.
USA.
Foreign-born. Thankfully for Team USA, Embiid will be playing center in the Olympics, at least as of now. I shouldn't say it that way. He's playing in the Olympics. He's committed to play.
He's healthy.
If he's healthy is what I meant. But yeah, Luka having 306 points in fifth.
He'll be tired from my two-round playoff run.
Luka with 306 points in fifth was the most fifth points anybody in fifth ever had. Those five guys clearly separated themselves from the field. I also, again, thought there'd be more spread out voting across the board. But with the way Giannis, Shea, and Luka have played, the fact that the Thunder and Mavs have, you know, really had surprising seasons to different degrees with the way their teams have played. Giannis obviously just had 64 points last week and has remained awesome for Milwaukee. You know, those guys have sort of created a second tier behind the top two guys by themselves.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, but nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, hoodie teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. Okay, so who are some of the guy? I don't know what there is to say. Like, I think all of them are having great seasons. I think the big thing is all of them are on teams that are excelling. And, you know, some of the guys who are not in that top five are on teams that maybe haven't played as consistently as the Thunder or the Bucks.
Hold on. Can I just point something out real quick on Giannis?
Sure.
For all the problems the Bucks have had and that we've talked about, they are tied for the second most wins in the league. They are one game back of the Boston Celtics. If the Bucks indeed win the Eastern Conference and Giannis continues putting up the numbers that he has, I do think that there's a distinct possibility that
I voted for Giannis last year to win the MVP. And I know you guys all think all I ever do is cape for Embiid, but I did vote for Giannis for MVP last year. And one of the reasons I did is because I felt his two-way play was absolutely sensational for a team that won 60 games.
Yeah.
So, but I think Giannis is in the same trap that Jokic kind of was in, which is that, you know, after the disappointment of the way they finished last year, the standard for him is even higher. Whether that's fair or not, that was the thing.
Well,
Jokic, you know, had gone out in the playoffs maybe before, you know, there's a feel the MVP should. And so the barrier for him to win that MVP, that third MVP last year, was really high. And I think
I'll say this,
Giannis will be really high.
Okay. But Joker does not, at the time, he did not have a finals run, much less a championship. Giannis has a finals MVP. He has a 50-point, 15-rebound closeout performance in the finals. If anything, that if we're talking about that standard, it should be, I just joked about Embiid being a two-round playoff guy. If anything, it should be attached to Embiid, but the way Embiid's
The way the voting has gone over the last 15 or 20 years, it seems like after that second MVP where the expectations get severe. And
you're talking about historic company.
Yeah.
Well, and it's also, if you look at it, right, this is also, as we've talked about, a narrative award. And the narrative has been the Sixers have greatly overachieved because of how Joel Embiid has played. And while the Bucks have won a lot of games, and obviously Giannis has been incredible, what has been the narrative around the Bucks? That everything's a mess, right?
Yeah.
That's been the story of their season. So
that won't be the narrative if we look up at the end of the year and they're 61-21.
No, I agree with you. That's what I'm saying. Like, they, because they've had a soft schedule and there's been all this stuff around them, they haven't had a lot of signature games for him to, for Giannis to go out there and win. But I agree
also,
with you. If they win the East.
They've been more focused on, you know, Dame steals the headlines a lot, even on Graves where Giannis plays great. The focus has been on Dame.
Well, yeah, because he does stuff like when Giannis scores 64, Dame passes Kyle Korver on the all-time three-pointers list. Just steals all the headlines and
the
game ball.
I saw what record did Dame do the other day? Top 20 in scoring? Or
no, he passed 20. He got 20,000 points.
He got 20,000 points for his career.
The game ball was successfully secured by the Bucks staff.
Hey, you saw when Brunson had 50, boy. Julius Randle like it was a rebound.
Holding that
of the
ball
game
up like Simba was pretty. it was pretty great. I think McMahon is totally right. If the Bucks finish first in the East and Giannis continues to dominate, like there's no question he could get back in the mix for this thing as this goes along.
Do we think SGA has a chance to get in the mix?
Say okay.
If they
win the West,
one seed.
Absolutely. I think it will be tough for Luka because I just don't think the Mavs are going to have the team success.
Well,
obviously if they somehow finish second in the West or something, then sure. But I just don't see that being realistic.
Luka's been incredible keeping their heads above water lately with Kyrie out. He's been playing 43, 44 minutes on a regular basis. Last night was the first time in a long time he hadn't had 30. They took a rebound from him post game, so he didn't get a triple double last night.
I think he only had two baskets in the second half of that game.
Yeah, and I mean, he has gotten himself in significantly better shape.
That was against the Clippers, by the way.
He deserves credit for committing to that. That has certainly helped. But like, they need Kyrie back, and honestly, they need Derek Lively back. And there's not like a definite timetable on either of those. Lively's a sprained ankle. Kyrie's a heel contusion, hopefully sooner than later on both of them. What he's done without Kyrie, I think temporarily boosts his case, but yeah, they're going to have to finish at least top four in the West for him to have any real hope.
Okay. There's
yeah,
a couple
that just doesn't seem likely.
A couple of guys who are not in the top five who are, you would think would be contenders, Bontemps, who was also receiving votes.
Yeah, so we'll run through the other seven guys quick. Jason Tatum finished sixth. Obviously, the Celtics have been the best team in the league so far, but you know Tatum has not had quite the same year as
he's also
other
playing
guys
on a team that's loaded.
Well, yes, right. Everybody's stats are a little bit down across the board, and also, like, let's be honest, Jason Tatum's a really great player. He's just not on the same level as guys like Embiid and Jokic
and
Giannis.
Well, I believe that he can be. I think Tatum can accomplish everything. I think
he's a perennial second team All NBA candidate.
Yeah, I think he's a 6 to 10 guy in the league, which is with the positionalist balloting. That's right where you're talking about.
I understand why you say that. I believe he has it within him to win MVPs and finals MVPs. I think he's got that kind of talent.
Well, I mean,
finals
that's
MVPs. I agree. I think he is a cut below the top five guys.
I understand why you say that. I think there's more.
All right, we don't need to belabor this point. Point's made. But I think it's probably going to be tough
for
him.
Yeah, you know, the guy goes ESPN Plus with a BS poll. He thinks he's running stuff, Wendy.
There's just more interesting people to get to later. Tyrese Haliburton was seventh. I don't expect him to stay in seventh. Indiana's probably going to be fighting for a play-in spot.
He gets an IST bounce, but LeBron doesn't. How about that?
We'll get into that in a second.
The IST was kind of Tyrese Halliburton's introduction to the not to hoop nerds, but to the greater.
Well, I hope the people voting for MVP had heard of Tyrese Haliburton.
Brother, yes, but if you think there's a lot of knowledge on this, I would suggest you review some all defensive ballots on a year to year basis.
Well, all right.
So Haliburton getting a bit of a bounce was not shocking. I do think he'll come down in the race as the year goes along. Anthony Edwards finishes tied for eighth. I do think that if Minnesota continues to stay atop the Western Conference standings, I think the Ant-Man can move up this ladder a little bit. I don't think he's a real threat to win the award, but Minnesota, as we talked about on Sunday, Brian, you were still kind of a skeptic about their chances of being a championship caliber team.
I wouldn't say I'm a skeptic. I'm still on the sideline. I just want to see him go through the stretch.
I would say that's being a skeptic.
Would mean I don't think they can do it. I don't think Jason Tatum can win.
Okay. How the hell is Wendy know? He doesn't. Hey, his league pass doesn't count.
That's right. He can't watch him.
I text Bontemps the other day. I go, what's this team with this logo of the Yeah, the wolf howling logo. At the moon. Yeah. I've never seen that. We were on ESPN.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, I think they're on TNT tonight. Oh, I'm in LA, so I'm clear. When I'm in LA, I can see.
Ooh, look out. The LA, you get it all, baby. Hey, by the way, that does remind me, speaking of voters, I think there should be a mandatory league pass hours minimum for people to be able to vote on this stuff at the end of the year. The league's got to figure out a way to check that. I mean, I don't know what the number is, 250 hours or something? If you haven't watched that much basketball, you shouldn't be able to.
Okay.
250.
For a whole season?
Well, I guess. Yeah, I guess that's true. I guess that's. Sounds like a lot of hours.
There's what, like, how many months?
I watch a lot of fourth quarters.
Games are 2 hours long. That's watching 120 games on League Pass.
Yeah, but I've never watched
100
hours
minimum. Give me a break. Like,
no,
I'm just saying people are also going to games and working. So,
that's all. 100 hours minimum. That's my suggestion.
All right.
I watched the fourth quarter.
Ask the IT department to track your hours. You can see how many hours you finish with at the end of the
year. She's over 250 a year.
I didn't say her hours. I said your hours.
Oh,
I know what her
well
hours
250,
are.
250, guarantee you.
Tied for eighth with Anthony Edwards. It was Kevin Durant. I was honestly a little surprised Durant got this many votes because of where the Suns were at. His numbers are obviously off the charts, and he was really propping them up during that stretch with Devin Booker missing a bunch of time. Obviously, Bradley Beal's hardly played. And then LeBron James was in 10th. I was frankly stunned LeBron didn't get more votes than this. He's been awesome. He just won the in-season tournament. Talked about earlier. I thought there'd be some sympathy votes for him.
Wait, did Mac 10 get a vote?
Mac 10 did get a vote.
Where was LeBron on his ballot?
I will not reveal where he was. But
that's bull. That's bull.
I don't think he was one of the
if McMenamin
I don't think he was one
reveal,
of the LeBron voters.
If McMenamin
I don't think
he was
one of the LeBron voters, but I also don't remember.
If he wants to reveal his ballot, he will have the form to do so.
First time in your life, you guys are good teammates. The Jackass brothers suddenly want to be all sweet and friendly to their teammates.
Well, the point is, I just thought LeBron was going to get a bunch of votes. And I was really surprised he hardly got any. And to me, I don't think he has any chance of winning MVP this year based off this. And probably have to say he's never going to win one again because this is probably the last best chance he's got with the way he's playing, the fact he's been healthy all year. And
well, just to be clear, he hasn't won an MVP in over a decade. So it's not stunning.
But I thought he's come close a couple times. He was fourth, I think. He was up near the top of the leaderboard a couple of years ago before he got hurt late in the year when they were up at the top of the Western Conference standings. And I thought he was going to be a lot higher up the list than this. So I was surprised he hardly got any votes.
Man, only four MVPs in his career. Jeez,
well, he's got a ton of top threes. And
who's doing just fine? Who's got more than four?
Kareem.
Kobe has.
Kobe has one.
Kareem. I misspoke. Kareem has
six,
and Jordan has five.
I think that's right.
All right, not bad company.
I think Magic has four. Bill Russell has four. Maybe Magic has three. I will say that
I'm looking this up quick because I can't remember it.
I believe
Kareem has six. Bill Russell and Magic and Michael have five. Wilt and LeBron have four. Moses, Larry, and Magic have three. Then a bunch have two.
So let me just say that in retrospect, the 2017-18 regular season, I believe, was the one where LeBron didn't win where he maybe should have. And there's a bunch of others where he feels like he should have won. But 2017-18...
He absolutely should not have won MVP that year. That was the year he quit on his team for a month, so they would make a trade.
I know, and that's why I didn't vote. I don't think it was a whole month, but that's why I didn't vote for him. But
it was pretty much the entire month of January. He made sure that things were miserable there so they would get rid of Isaiah Thomas.
Which is why I didn't vote for him. But
which certain people later used as an argument in saying why he should win MVP, which was insane at the time and remains insane.
Who used that as an argument?
Somebody that was mentioned earlier.
Let's forget about that. Bob Pettit. Let's forget about that. I'm just saying in retrospect, that was an MVP season. That's what I'm saying.
I mean, he's had like 15 MVP.
You could say that about
seasons.
A lot of seasons.
I know, but that one particularly, that's all.
Why that one particularly? Why? Because he played all the games?
He did that, yes. But that was
played in the playoffs? Like, why that season?
Well, it was arguably his greatest playoff run ever. Yes.
Yeah, and he got a finals.
Okay, but
MVP.
That's not a playoff award.
They lost that. They got.
Oh, that's
that.
Right. Yeah.
No, I'm not going to go into it right now. But I'm just saying that when you look at LeBron, he has a bunch of top threes. He probably should have more than four, But the year that I think he really deserved it, in retrospect, I didn't believe at the time, and I didn't vote for him first, was 2017-18, his last year in Cleveland.
Right. Who else like you want to hear an argument as to why he should have won it beyond he was good in the playoffs?
All right, Wendy. I'll read it in the chapter of my next book.
Oh, in your face.
This guy.
His next
look at this guy.
New York Times bestseller, baby.
That's right. That's right. Then the final two people to get votes after LeBron were De'Aaron Fox, who got a couple of votes, and Rudy Gobert, who got one fifth place vote, leading Minnesota the best
from McMahon
defense in the league.
It was not
not for McMahon.
My top five was the top five in the thing.
Me
I
too.
Think in a little bit different order, but that was.
I think I had Luka fifth, just because I think they're their team sort of. I sort of had them fifth.
I mean, look, those five guys. Nobody else was on more than 15 ballots, so those five guys dominated the voting.
And I needed to wait an extra 2 days, McMahon, to come up with those five.
Well, really had to think hard. There's one guy who's not on here that's really interesting. And in years past, there's been a very clear reason not to have Kawhi Leonard on an MVP ballot because he didn't play a lot of games.
So the All-Star voting started this week. Mm-hmm. And for NBA Today, we were asked to pick our West All-Stars. And I have Kawhi on the starting five in my West All-Stars.
Yeah,
he should be a lock right now. He's been unbelievable.
I was the only one.
Really?
Zach Lowe and all these jokers had Durant. Not that there's anything wrong with Durant, but I think Kawhi's been awesome.
I think the Kawhi third spot has played between Durant and LeBron, and
Kawhi
and
has played Jokic gets every, the he's played every game, correct?
He's maybe missed one or two, but he's played basically
just
every
had a,
game.
Ohm just
every
had
game.
A story, and I'm pretty sure he's played every single game.
I'll tell you right now.
And has been absolutely incredible. And right now, we hammered the Clippers a lot when they were in the mud after the Harden trade. Right now, the Clippers are playing as well as any team in the NBA. They have the longest winning streak in the NBA right now. 9 straight games. I believe that's tied for the longest in the league this season. Kawhi
has played every game, by the way.
He's played every game. Look,
by the way, they are playing in Oklahoma City tonight. So just qualifier.
Okay. Well, 9 games going into Oklahoma City. And look, if the winning streak ends on a back-to-back.
The Thunder are favored by 5.5. Yeah. The bunch of the Clippers players are ill. Paul George missed the game, I believe, Wednesday, illness.
And look, if the winning streak ends on a back-to-back against a really good Oklahoma City team on the road, that doesn't change anything I'm saying about how awesome Kawhi has been. Last night was just a reminder, 30 points, 10 rebounds, 5 assists.
They were down by how many in the fourth?
It was back and forth because they were up like 20 some odd in the first half. And so the Mavericks, it was a seesaw game in the fourth quarter. The Mavericks made a huge comeback.
Well, I know that Kawhi scored or assisted on 15 of the last 16 Clipper points.
Absolutely incredible. And it's just his numbers don't jump off the page like some other guys, averaging 24 and change, 6 rebounds, 3.5 assists, shooting 52% from the floor. But man, he's not the best wing defender in the world anymore. He's still really good on that end. And he's still just a guy who, when he gets the ball and it's, you know, the game's in the balance, you feel awfully good about your chances. I mean,
there's a real fear factor with him still when he's playing like
100%,
this.
100%. 100%.
Oh, yeah. Well, the fear factor is restored.
Yes.
And by the way, they, like you said, they deserve credit for doing the things they frankly probably should have been doing from the beginning, but getting to it, getting the ball in James Harden's hands, getting him away from playing with Russell Westbrook. Westbrook has been pretty good in his limited minutes off the bench, which is a role he can excel in. He's willing to do it, which it seems like for now he is. Harden is playing well with the ball, and he's setting up PG and Kawhi for these shots, and they're cooking and playing the way they need to play. And they were really good. The last competitive game with Dallas Wednesday night, down the stretch, Harden just made the right plays down the stretch, got them that win with a couple of guys out on both sides, and they're playing lights out and looking like a real threat.
Amir Coffey turning into a bit of a defensive factor, and he was guarding Luka down the stretch. But speaking of defense on the Clippers, quote, "Ain't too many people defending better than me at this point, if we're keeping it honest," said Russell Westbrook. All right,
Give us the stats. And I'm going to give you an eyeball test.
Russell Westbrook leads the NBA in both field goal percentage and effective field goal percentage allowed as the contesting defender among players to contest more than 175 shots, ranks in the top 10 in points per direct touch allowed among players to defend 1,000 touches. These are like high-level analytics that they're...
Yes, they are.
Stats and Info is trying to lean into his statement. Ranks in the top 15 in effective field goal percentage defense allowed on half-court matchups among players to defend 100-plus matchups. Now, top 10 and top 15 in these obscure stats, I don't know if that means ain't too many people defending better, but, you know, Russell Westbrook's case rests.
And, you know, he feels like he should have been an all-defensive player before. I think that's absolutely ludicrous because there's been most of his career, he's been a defensive liability because he was out of position a lot because he was chasing steals and rebounds and not actually playing real defense. We can state that fact and give him credit for what he's doing now. And Luka had a long 30-point streak in last night. He ended up with 28, but it was a tough 28. 28 on 9 and 25. Certainly the minutes that he's playing have been part of that. You can say, well, hey, the Clippers were doubling him constantly. Well, them and every other team that they play. It's not like that's a unique strategy. Russ took a couple stints on Luka, and I mean, it was like Pat Bev type of pick him up 94 feet, whether he's got the ball or not, you know, just crazy energy all up in his jersey. And Russ can come in knowing, hey, I'm not going to be playing 25, 30, 35 minutes. Luka's going to be playing 43, 44 minutes. Russ has the luxury of being able to really just be relentless with his energy. But man, there were possessions where Luka didn't touch the ball because Russell Westbrook was just denying him with so much force and energy that it's just like, sheesh. And so like he absolutely, especially in the first half, was a big factor defensively. And look, I think we got to give Russ credit because we talked about this and they finally got to it. Harden and Russ really aren't a compatible duo. And Harden's the clear-cut better player at this point and the priority and the guy they brought in to try to, you know, get them over the hump, running the show with Kawhi and Paul George. So that didn't leave a big role for us. And there was danger in that. In that, you know, hey, how's Russ going to react? Is he going to be grumpy? Is he going to be causing, you know, problems? Is anybody going to call him a vampire? You know, there's all kinds of danger in that. I'm not around the Clippers on a regular basis. I wasn't in Dallas last night, but just watching the games, watching the energy that he's playing with, watching the energy that he has on the bench. You know, like Kawhi made this crazy Euro step in crunch time last night, and Russ is jumping up and down on the sidelines. He's doing the Euro step. He's giddy as could be. I think we've got to give Russ credit for not just accepting this role, but really kind of pouring himself into being a major contributor in a pretty small role.
Well, we'll see how Shai Gilgeous-Alexander feels about that quote after reading that.
Yeah. Look, Russ, I think the biggest thing you could say about Russ is what you just did, that he's buying into this role and playing it well. The idea he's an all defense candidate is to me ludicrous, but
eighth man of the year candidate for sure.
Look, if he's willing to play a hard 20 minutes off the game and fill in a role for them, he could be really effective and useful for them and help them win a lot of games. So,
and you know what? How many times, and Russ has struggled with it with the Lakers, certainly. How many times have we seen guys that are no-brainer Hall of Famers not be able to adapt to a smaller role toward the end of their career, right? And I think it took a few teams and a tough couple of years for Russ to get to this point. It took a really rough start for the Clippers to ask him. Well, I guess it was Russ's idea for the Clippers as a team to get this point. But I do think as the Clippers are rolling, you know, we're going to talk about the way Kawhi is playing. We're going to talk about the way that Harden's running the show. He's not their number one offensive option, but he's the guy who's distributing the touches. Paul, we're going to give a lot of credit to people. Russ deserves credit for being a contributor to all this, despite something that could have been a big blow to his ego.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. All right. We mentioned briefly Durant getting votes. The Suns lost to Portland the other night to fall to, I think, 15 and 14.
Oof.
It's been easy to kind of put the Suns in a different category because they've been so banged up. But
You'll get your chance, Bontemps. Hold your breath.
We've been doing this since July.
Saw your mute button was on. Try it again.
14 and 13. Not 15 and 14. They've really lacked in my view, watching their last couple of games, they beat Washington two games ago, and it was not an impressive victory.
It was a squeaker.
They did play well in the first half against Portland, which, you know, I guess was a good sign, but absolutely rolled over in the second half. And they just, you know, typically when you see a team lose a star player, even if over the medium term, they tend to struggle, you see a bounce. And I don't know if the Beal injury, it being the third time he's gone down, was deflating. I wonder about their chemistry, not because they got issues with each other, but because their entire team is brand new. Like nobody's played with each other before. And the minimum players that they signed, frankly, are playing like minimum players. You know, there are moments when Eric Gordon looks good. There have been moments where Josh Okogie, although he's been out recently, looks good. There's been moments, you know, Grayson Allen's not a minimum player, but, you know, he's had moments. But, you know, this is a very new team and they have a new coach. And so I don't see a lot of cohesion, togetherness, fight from this team. Basically, it's Durant and Booker trying to do their Durant and Booker thing. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. Frank Vogel is asking for patience. He is saying this is the process. It's going to take some time. I believe it. This team reminds me, I've said it over and over, I'm going to keep saying it. It reminds me so much of the 2010 Heat. Their construction reminds me of the Heat. The Heat's players were a lot younger, but that team was absolutely thrashing around in the pool for 20 games and their stars were all healthy in that case. And it really took a year for them to figure it out. So I'm taking a step back. I am a believer that this team is a real contender still, but I'm feeling alone in that. And I don't really have a strong case to back it up, but trust me, I'll tell you who looks good in this Phoenix situation is Chris Paul, because Monty Williams isn't acquitting himself well in Detroit. That team is unacceptable for a team with that level of talent to lose 24 games in a row.
We're talking about this Thursday afternoon. Detroit is playing Utah the second night of a back-to-back with Lauri Markkanen not playing, with Jordan Clarkson not playing, Taylor Norton Tucker not playing. They better
Keontae
win that
George
game
not
Thursday
playing.
Night. Keontae George not playing. They
the,
better
the
win.
The Pistons are actually favored on
only
a tournament
third,
game.
Only the third time this year. I've been just saying.
They better win that game, and they ain't winning for a long time.
Chris Paul's role on that team, even though he missed a bunch of time with injuries in recent years, it's looking better.
Hold on. The problem with saying Chris Paul's one come out looking goodness when you're saying Monty Williams is struggling, let me look at the standings.
This is a very odd argument. What are we doing here?
Let me look at the standings.
Here's who's looking good in this. Here. Me. Why? Because I said the DeAndre Ayton trade was bad. And I said this team had a lot of injury prone players who were going to miss a lot of games. And those two things have been true. I don't know what this Chris Paul thing is.
Yeah, because the Warriors are a spot below the Suns in the standings. So he ain't smelling like
Chris Paul is not looking very good shooting any jump shots, which all of them are missing short.
Yes, God forbid you guys allow nuance.
Waiting to see what the nuance is leading
to. Chris Paul's role that he played on the Suns was pretty important, and that is being highlighted by the fact of the way the Suns are performing and the way.
Well, yes, because the guy they traded him for is hurt all the time. That's the problem. Like, Chris Paul it'd be nice if they had an ambulatory point guard on their team.
Yeah, Chris Paul is old aunts. He ain't nuance. Listen, the problem with injury-prone players is they tend to get hurt a lot, and that's what's happening with the Suns. Bradley Beal has been hurt basically all season. They've played 24 minutes as a trio together. And it's not just that Bradley Beal hasn't been there. When Beal's not there, the workload on Kevin Durant and Devin Booker is not sustainable. It's not sustainable for especially KD at his age with his injury history. But, you know, Booker's been banged up a lot this season, the last couple of seasons. And those guys, it's like it was in the playoff series against the Nuggets after CP3 went out. If Booker and Durant aren't awesome, the Suns aren't very good. Like they can't afford those guys to have off nights. An off shooting night for Booker, they lose to freaking Portland. It's a struggle, man. And you're right about you talk about zero continuity. And Booker, if anybody asked Booker about, you're the only player left from the 2021 finals roster, he's been asked that a million times. You'll get an eye roll. But the fact that they've completely turned over the roster since then, and basically since last year's trade deadline, continuity matters, man. And you see, like you saw the Wolves, it took a year for the Wolves kind of to get their feet under them after the Gobert trade and with some injuries and whatnot. It's just tough to make wholesale roster changes and hit the ground running. And I think they're dealing with that as well as the injury issues.
Well, and Nurkic has just not been good. And, you know, they again, like you said, this team was built on three guys who get hurt a lot.
I think Nurkic has done okay, but he hasn't
been okay. Nurkic is a okay starting center.
I would say he's below average starting center who's been below average.
I think if you're ranking him by numbers, he's below average.
And he's been below average. But, you know, again, like KD is, like you said, he's played a huge load in terms of minutes and role on this team. He's only missed a couple of games so far. Knock on wood, he stays healthy. But if he has to keep carrying this kind of load for a long time, he's probably going to end up missing some time. He's an older player. He's had a bunch of injuries. It's just the realistic reality at this point for him. And, you know, who knows when Bradley Beal's going to be back. It's just, you know, all the problems that they potentially were going to have all come to the fore in the first third of the season. And when you start missing games with injuries and having guys out, that's hard to, like, get that ship turned around at some point, because there's all these ancillary impacts of that, of guys having to play more minutes themselves and make up for more stuff. And then it just builds on it as it goes along. And like McMahon said, there's not a great history of these kind of moves resulting in immediate success. And you're only compounding the chances of that outcome, the negative outcome happening, when you have so little time for these guys to be together on the court. No matter when Beal's back at this point, it's going to be pretty limited before the playoffs start.
Basically, Beal, and you know, he told Spears in his Landscape diary, he hopes to be back for that 2-week time or whatever. Let's say he's back start of January. There's been almost half the season gone. He's essentially missed half the season at that point, because like he's barely played the games he's playing. It's not like
he's barely played dating back to last midseason. Quite frankly,
it's not like he's been in any kind of rhythm. I don't know,
even Durant and Booker have barely played together. Durant barely played last year before he got hurt. And, you know, obviously they played some in the playoffs, and Durant and Booker have been out different games this year even. So even those two guys don't have a ton of chemistry yet.
I don't think you can completely dismiss the Suns simply because they've got two of the top. We can argue the number, but it's not a very big number.
For sure.
Two of the top, what, dozen players in a league or whatever
if
you want
healthy, to argue. If they're healthy come the start of the playoffs, they're going to be a feared team, just like the Lakers were last year. Like the Lakers got some breaks in terms of guys getting hot, you know, Rui shooting the lights out, but they had LeBron and AD healthy when the playoffs started. And if you have those two guys healthy, you get a little luck, you got a chance. And same with the Phoenix. If those guys are healthy in mid-April and they get a little luck, they'll be a threat, but they're not. It's just hard to look at them and say they're going to get to their optimal outcome. And it's also hard to look at it, frankly, and say they're going to be healthy. At this point, you have to just assume somebody's not even going to be out there.
I mean, it's almost like Beal is a bonus star, because that's like you can't count on him. But boy, that's a big old contract for a, well, we hope he can be around some.
Well, I'll also tell you what, one thing that's been overlooked in the whole thing with Phoenix, they make these trades, they take on all this money, and what's the first thing they do? They dump Cameron Payne for nothing. Save money.
Yeah.
Right. And listen, Cameron Payne is not a all world player by any means, but he's a perfectly adequate rotation guard who can come in off the bench and score. And when you look at this Phoenix team, You know, a lot of these games, especially early on when it was just Kevin Durant and a bunch of guys who really couldn't do anything with the ball and he was trying to carry him along. If they'd kept Cameron Payne around in his $5 or $6 million, I think $6 million contract for this year, but he probably would have won them a couple games early in the year.
I don't know about that.
Well, listen, the bottom line is they took on all this money and then they started cutting costs to save money afterward. And left themselves with even less debt than they already had.
Wendy, he was a rotation player for them that they cut to save money.
Fine.
They didn't cut. They dumped to save money. That's
fine. They're not in this position because they cut. Can't they?
No, but it reinforces the point that if you're going to go all in with these three guys who are injury prone, if you're then going to turn around and cut some of the limited depth you have, has a chance of backfiring on you. And they gave up
Tumani Kamara in the
Ayton trade.
In the Ayton trade, which was an offshoot of the Dame trade. And you can say, well, no, when they gave him up, they felt internally this guy could be a rotation player right away. And that was, they've talked
about
this.
He's the Blazers starting center. You know, Chauncey Billups said the other day, starting small forward.
That was a painful thing for them to get squeezed on.
Yes.
Chauncey Billups was saying the other day when they were up there that Cameron's workout with them was not good. And so the individual workout when he came to Portland was not good. And they didn't draft him, obviously. And then they watched him in summer league and they were like, wow, this guy can really play. And they were able to get him a couple of weeks
later. By the way, a rookie who was a teammate of Anthony Edwards at University of Georgia. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. Okay. Thank you for doing the straw poll, Bontemps. Always enjoyable. Thank you, McMahon.
Talking about Memphis? Oh, we're just going to slip by that.
We're at the end of the road here. I'll ask real quick.
Brian has more important plans, clearly, McMahon.
No, I don't. Yeah, I just, you know, I just don't want the pod to go on too long. Yeah, McMahon. Well, I don't know what the vibe is like in Memphis tonight because it hasn't happened yet. But certainly it was an interesting game to be at, one of the more interesting games of the season to be at the other night in New Orleans. What was that moment like?
You know, I mean, no, Ja's keeping receipts, as he says, and all that kind of stuff. He ain't going to find one that's questioned how good he is at basketball.
Of course not.
And this was, it was a reminder. It wasn't a revelation and it's not redemption, but it is a reminder that Ja Morant is an absolute franchise altering type of talent. And I mean, you talk about the athleticism, the skill, the cojones, like you could not imagine a better delayed season debut than, and they hope what is symbiosis, symbolic, whatever the word is, they hope that it's symbolic of their season, a terrible start and you storm back and celebrate at the end. They were down 24 points in the second quarter. The Pelicans went on a 28-2 run, down 19 at the half. And then third quarter, Ja took over. Fourth quarter, and Ja's over there, like, you know, he's been scrimmaging and practicing, but like you can't simulate NBA game action. He's going into the tunnel during timeouts and between quarters and hitting his inhaler. Like his lungs were burning. You know, he talked about the end of the game. He thought his calves are cramping. He's over there using the massage gun on his calves just before his game winner. But with all that, he's got Herb Jones defending him, one of the best defenders in the league. And Ja absolutely lit him on fire. And it was just Ja Morant doing what he does best, and that is attacking off the dribble, getting in the paint, wreaking havoc, dominating.
The spin move down for the final shot. That was
vintage. And they spaced the floor, and like if you throw a double at him, the man's a great passer too. And especially in the middle of the floor, their spacing was right. You know, somebody's going to get a wide open look if you throw a second fender at him, and just comes right at him with a runway, spin move in the lane, little layup. You know, again, nobody's ever questioned whether this guy is an incredible talent. And it was a reminder that, yeah, he's that type of talent.
After what he's been through, he can have his moment. He can beat his chest a little bit. That's great. I mean, that's why Ja Morant is great for the league, is that. But obviously, that's not what's in question. I think
he has at least said the right things about understanding he's going to be judged based on actions off the floor, whatever. He's on the floor now. He's going to have to be phenomenal and stay healthy for the rest of the season for the Grizzlies to have any hope of salvaging this thing after a 6-19 start. But you talk about a franchise that desperately needed something to be excited about. He's given them something to be excited about, and I'm sure this place is going to be absolutely bonkers tonight.
Actions over words. Let's see how the next few months go, and hopefully we're just talking about Ja Morant's exploits on the court.
All right, we'll see how it goes tonight there in Memphis. Thank you, Mr. McMahon. Enjoy your evening. Thank you, Mr. Bontemps. Enjoy your time there in Orlando. Thank you for listening to... Oh, we have a new producer on today. Obviously, ooh, Jackson's holding down the fort. Our new producer, Sean, great to have you on board. Thank you for listening to the Hoop Collective podcast. We will talk to you next week.
Adios, amigos.
Real quick, what's the easiest choice you can make? Window seat over middle? Taco Tuesday over salad? What about selling with Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/hoop, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/hoop now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/hoop.